Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Patrick Smith, who's an active airline pilot, air travel blogger, and author whose latest book is Cockpit Confidential, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel, Questions, Answers, and Reflections. He blogs at askthepilot.com and has an article at the Huffington Post, The Continuing Mystery of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. Welcome to Background Briefing, Patrick Smith.
Thanks for having me.
And I was just speaking then a minute ago with the aeronautical engineer and head of the Department of Aeronautics and Astronautics at MIT and director of the International Center for Air Transportation. And the last thing he mentioned was the possibility that the turn that the plane took once it was apparently hijacked, even though that's not the word the Malaysian authorities want to use, it was consistent with a turn towards the vector for an emergency airstrip, which might indicate that there was a traumatic event on board, and that's what they're reacting to.
That could be. In fact, that's something I brought up in my blog post. If you go to askthepilot.com, my most recent post discusses that same idea, where when the plane made its turn to the west, that could be an indication of somebody commandeering the airplane, or it could be an indication that the crew was making that turn towards a diversion airport, and on the way to that diversion airport was overcome by smoke or fumes or for some other reason, they never made it, and the airplane possibly even continued on in that direction by itself after a certain point. That's just speculation, but it is conceivable.
But I guess what works against that speculation is the fact that the ACARS, the Aircraft Communications Addressing and Reporting System, apparently was turned off before the last contact with the cockpit was sent to back to the Malaysian Airlines headquarters, saying something like "All's well, good night."
That does jump out at me a little bit. It does make that scenario, the diverting to another airport scenario, less likely. Meanwhile, a lot has been made about the terminology used in that final transmission, the crew saying goodbye or goodnight, or exactly how it was put, I can't recall. But those sorts of salutations are actually very common in commercial aviation. When moving from one air traffic control sector to another, we always use phrases like have a good night, see you later, take care, good luck, and so on and so forth. It's just basic politeness over the radio to talk in those terms when saying hello or goodbye to a particular air traffic control facility. So I'm not sure why some people have seized on that. It's to my mind, not relevant at all.
Well, it does seem that the Malaysian authorities, now that they're investigating the pilot, the co-pilot, and the flight engineer, are focusing on the possibility of suicide for perhaps insurance. There was a case of Egypt Air, and I believe of a Japanese airline as well, where the pilots or the flight crew used the plane to commit suicide and, of course, took out all the passengers as well. What's the history of that, and is there any way that since those incidents that anything has been done, if anything can be done?
Well, the incident you're referring to was the Egypt Air accident in, I believe, 1996. Plane that crashed after takeoff from Kennedy Airport when the first officer allegedly flew the airplane into the ocean, basically. And by the way, there would have on the Malaysia Airlines plane, there would have been a captain and a first officer, not a flight engineer. There would have been two crew members, captain and FO, or if you prefer, captain and co-pilot, not a third pilot. But anyway, what to say about that possibility? It's not likely, but it is possible. And as an airline pilot myself, it makes me wince a little bit. It doesn't look good. It's kind of a disrespect on all of us, and people start looking suspiciously at pilots, like, why would one of you do this sort of thing? And is this something that we should all be worried about? And no, I mean, the history of aviation is very long. Accidents, major accidents, rare as they are, there have been many, and over such a long history, I mean, just weird things once in a while happen, and that could be one of them, and perhaps it's happened again, but two times in 100 years or whatever, that's not really an indication that there's some pathology here. It's not something that the average passenger really ought to be sitting back there in the cabin worrying about. It's just it shouldn't be on the passenger's radar, really, unfortunate as it is. And I'm asked, well, what the airlines do? I mean, how are pilots selected, and are they screened psychologically? And pilot selection is a long, multi-step process, and most major carriers do run their new hires through some sort of professional psychological screening, and then there are medical evaluations that we have at least twice a year, and psychological evaluation is part of that. But beyond that, pilots aren't psychoanalyzed every time we come to work. I mean, at a certain point, you're a professional, and you're expected to carry yourself professionally and do your job professionally. And in that regard, I guess it's not a whole lot different from most other professions, where at a certain point, you're just, there's an expectation.
Again, I'm speaking with Patrick Smith, who's an active airline pilot, air travel blogger, and author whose latest book is Cockpit Confidential, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel, Questions, Answers, and Reflections. He blogs at askthepilot.com and has an article at the Huffington Post, The Continuing Mystery of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. Well, of course, one has to be careful not to be ghoulish about this speculation, because the next of kin of these passengers still are holding out hope that they're alive. But when a plane disappears at high altitude, it's extremely rare, is it not? I mean, Pan Am, we know the one why that exploded over Lockerbie, and the other examples, the more recent one of Air France, it looks as though that was pilot error compounding bad information that was coming, because I believe the instrument that measures the speed was somehow impaired. I think there was a fairly serious investigation done into that. So the reason we're having this conversation is that it is extremely rare, and now we find, because planes don't drop out of the sky, but now we find there's a possibility of some kind of human intervention, and I guess that's where we're at now, is it?
Well, I think where you're going with that is towards the possibility of the plane still being out there somewhere in one piece, having landed on some remote airstrip or otherwise, having been smuggled into an airport somewhere. There's been speculation all over the internet and even on TV about those possibilities. NPR did a thing where they came up with a possibility of 600 different airports in all these different countries where the plane could have landed. Conceivably, that's true. It's extremely unlikely that occurred. As remote as some of these airports are, none of them are remote enough that you can simply sneak in a Boeing 777 without lots and lots and lots of people being aware of that fact. It would be extraordinarily difficult to do that. And corollary to that, people are suggesting the idea that somebody did that for purposes of later using the airplane as a weapon. I mean, putting a nuclear bomb on it or some biological agent and then taking off again and flying it over a city. I don't know. That's getting a little too James Bond for me. And, remember, there are hundreds or even thousands of business jets and cargo planes out there that move around the world pretty much anonymously as it is. Any one of those planes could do the job. If that's really what was going on, why would a terrorist group or somebody else steal an airplane full of people and draw all of the world's attention on the fact? It just doesn't make sense.
Sure, and you can actually buy used aircraft at any rate. It seems like an awfully elaborate way to go if you wanted to get a flying bomb.
Many simpler ways of doing it.
It's true. But the expert from England, David Glevier, was saying yesterday that the southern route that the satellite indicated as a second option, as opposed to the northern route, which is where the speculation about landing comes from. The southern route goes into the Indian Ocean, and that led to this sort of idea of the suicide scenario. Mm-hmm. The question does arise, why would you bother to take over a plane and then just fly it into the ocean?
Well, who knows? I mean, again, looking back over the whole long history of aviation and the different accidents and some of them being as weird as they've been, a lot of them too to this day are shrouded in mystery, and we just don't ever know the full answer of how they happened or why they happened. I mean, this could turn out to be just another forever unsolved mystery. You know, rare as that is in this day and age, where we almost always get to the bottom of aviation accidents, the possibility still exists that we won't. And I think people need to be willing to realize that and accept that.
Well, given that, you know, these tragedies and often result in improvements to flight safety, and of course 9/11 resulted in strengthening cockpit doors, etc., is there anything that could be done or should have been done? I mean, the only criticism I've heard is that maybe the Malaysian airliner didn't have a system that would have given more data to the outside world, either through satellites, etc. Is that your understanding?
It's hard to say what are the lessons, what can we draw from this, without really knowing what happened in the first place. That's getting way ahead. And meanwhile, you know, here's what we're up against. There's just such a lack of evidence, a lack of information. And so everybody becomes an expert, and everybody's sitting out there, you know, watching this story and thinking, well, here's how, you know, to fix it, and here's what we should have done. And a lot of people throwing out these ideas, you know, don't understand some of the complications involved. For example, why can't we live stream data constantly from an airplane up into space, back down to the ground, monitoring it constantly, you know, everywhere it is all the time? Well, there are lots of reasons why you can't do that. It would take tremendous amounts of bandwidth, I guess, for lack of a better term. All of that information having to be streamed to a satellite, it would be extremely expensive, as well as extraordinarily challenging technologically, and that's just one aircraft, and now you've got thousands of aircraft in the air at any one time, all doing this same thing. And for what exactly? For the bizarre once every 25 years sort of incident that we're dealing with here. I don't know if that's really a smart idea, putting that much, all of those resources into something like that. I think there are better ways and smarter ways, more cost-effective ways of improving air safety.
So, Patrick Smith, in terms of your latest book, Cockpit Confidential, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel Questions and Answers and Reflections, is there anything that in the what we know so far that strikes you as an anomaly in terms of what we know about this crew? There were reports out of Australian television I think it was the co-pilot invited some young women into the cockpit and was showing off and smoking, etc. That's been refuted by the families. I mean, it's difficult. Again, you know, you are, of course, as you've cautioned it on a number of times, we are speculating wildly here, and it's probably something that one doesn't want to be too associated with conspiracy theories, you know.
Well, worst-case scenario about the pilot having invited people in the cockpit and taken those pictures, I mean, that doesn't look good, and that's something that is really across the board forbidden at airlines all around the world. Did it happen? I'm not sure. If it did, is the context of the story exactly right, or is something just being pulled out and thrown at us by the media, and we don't really understand the details of it? But again, even worst case, sure, that's you know, it looks bad, but whether or not it has anything to do with what happened here is another question entirely.
Well, at the risk of belaboring you here, the only other scenario that's come up is that somehow this plane could have shadowed Singapore Airlines Flight 68 as it proceeded across the Andaman Sea into the Bay of Bengal and in Indian airspace, and then on to India, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and finally Turkmenistan before proceeding onwards for its final destination in Barcelona. Again, I suppose that's technically possible, that you could merge the radar signatures, but it's...
It's possible, but very difficult, and especially when you're talking about two airplanes that large.
Right.
And then what exactly would have been the purpose for this again?
Well, the idea is that these planes.
No, I'm being rhetorical because that goes back to what we were saying before. That's just such an elaborate
right.
and logistically difficult plot and right. what again? I just that's going all James Bond on me again. I'm just not ready to go there. But I think that people have a tendency to come up with fringe theories like that because that's human nature, especially when there's just nothing else to go on. And right. I think people don't want to settle for the easier explanation, which is that there was a hijacking or some sort of takeover that went bad and the airplane crashed into the ocean. That's what I think probably happened. That's the most logical and simplest explanation. So it's at this point probably the correct one, but you know, with certain details again that we don't really know about yet. But that being the gist of it, that's where I am at this point, which in a way is further than I want to go actually, because you know, almost always in these situations, whatever theories we come up with turn out to be either totally wrong or incomplete. So I could turn out to be completely wrong about that, but that's my hunch at this point.
Well, Patrick Smith, I do appreciate you joining us here today.
Yeah, sure, anytime. Thanks for having me on.
Again, I've been speaking with Patrick Smith, who's an active airline pilot, air travel blogger, and author whose latest book is Cockpit Confidential, Everything You Need to Know About Air Travel, Question, Answers, and Reflections. He blogs at askthepilot.com and has an article at the Huffington Post, The Continuing Mystery of Malaysia Airlines Flight 370. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. We can also contact me. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.